Okay, the next case we have this morning is United States v. Sager. Parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Redman and members of the court, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Doug Ottenwes. I represent Airman Jeffrey Sager. Chief Judge Redman, with the court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
On the findings worksheet, the members rejected TK being too intoxicated to consent. They rejected TK being asleep when the sexual act occurred. And they rejected TK being unconscious when the sexual act occurred. Despite these rejections, the lower court heavily relied on these allegations in affirming Airman Sager's conviction, violating his double jeopardy rights. Moreover, they ignored the canons of statutory interpretation to create a novel theory of liability that is completely unsupported by law under Article 120. Now, the members chose a sole theory of guilt in this case. They said that Airman Sager reasonably should have known that Airman TK was otherwise unaware that the sexual act was occurring. Now, otherwise unaware is not the same as asleep or unconscious. However, the lower court wrongly concluded that asleep and unconscious are merely examples of how an individual can be otherwise unaware, instead of treating these as separate theories of criminal liability. Now, there are two canons of statutory interpretation that belie the lower court's interpretation. First would be the ordinary meaning canon, which says that the plain and ordinary definition of the terms prevail. And in this case, we have the use of the word otherwise, which means not the same or in a different situation. Now, when you combine that with the use of the disjunctive or that exists in this particular portion of Article 120, we have a clear intent for otherwise unaware to be a catch-all for those situations that don't encompass asleep or unconscious. The lower court, however, chose to abolish this distinction when they said that knows or reasonably should know the recipient of the contact does not know it's happening is the appropriate interpretation. However, the plain language of the statute does not support this.
Well, what is otherwise unaware? I mean, if we define it by exclusion, okay, you got conscious, unconscious over here, a subset of which presumably is asleep.
Correct, Your Honor. Well,
yeah, then you've got otherwise unaware.
Correct, Your Honor. So some examples, I'm sorry to interrupt, Your Honor.
Go ahead. Well, no. Assuming there are alternative theories of liability, Now, tell me exactly where the error is here.
Well, the error here, Your Honor, is that Article 120 created three separate theories of liability.
Okay. The CCA erred.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. In doing what?
The CCA made an error in this case in changing the meaning of the statute here. The way the natural language of the statute is asleep, comma, unconscious, comma, or otherwise unaware. They combined those into one big umbrella, I guess, and said that, well, asleep and unconscious are simply ways that can be otherwise unaware. But if you look at the natural language, that doesn't make sense for how
well,
the statute is drafted.
They are ways one can't be, they aren't exclusive ways one can be unaware, but they certainly are ways.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And had Congress chose to draft the statute in the way that the CCA and the way that the CCA interpreted it, it would not be a problem. However, the statute as it is constructed has three separate theories offset by commas and the use of the disjunctive or and not the word and or including, but it is clearly offset from the two theories of liability that precede it.
In your view, do we have to get past the plain reading of the statute?
I don't believe you have to get past the plain reading of the statute, Your Honor. I believe that the surplusage canon though also just strengthens our case here, and that every word in the statute should be given meaning, and that we should interpret Congress to not have put unnecessary words into the statute. If it was the intent of Congress to say that asleep and unconscious are simply ways that somebody can be otherwise unaware, then they wouldn't have had to put those words in the statute in the first place, and especially to offset it with the use of the words or and otherwise. So by taking the NMCCA's interpretation of this particular subset of Article 520, they've essentially written out four words of the statute, which is inappropriate in this case, Your Honor.
Counsel, let's assume for a moment that this court were to agree with you that the CCA erred. At the end of your brief, you're asking us to set aside and dismiss. Why isn't the appropriate step on the part of this court to simply remand to the CCA for a proper appellate review?
Well, Your Honor, certainly one of the options of this court would be to remand to the NMCCA for a proper factual sufficiency review. But once this court in this case gets rid of the asleep, the unconscious, and the intoxication element, the charge is legally insufficient. So in that case, we do not believe that the case would have to go back to the NMCCA.
Why shouldn't we let the CCA take another look at that and wrestle with that issue rather than us take that on at this point?
Well, I guess I would leave that to the judgment of this court, Your Honor. I believe in that this court can find it legally insufficient, but if this court would choose to remand to the NMCCA, that would be acceptable as well. We're just asking for a fair review under Article 66, in which case the venue, I guess, is up to this court at that point, Your Honor.
Counsel, picking up where Judge Olson just left off, and going back to the statute and the three pieces, shall we call them for the moment, isn't it possible that the otherwise unaware could include kind of a combination of what was going on at the time of the offense? There's apparently some evidence that the victim was intoxicated to some extent, some evidence that he was in and out of this sleepiness. So couldn't the members have simply decided he's not really unconscious, he's not asleep, but that combination still made him unaware? Could they have decided that based on these facts?
Well, the members could have decided that, Your Honor, but the record shows that the members had an explicit not guilty finding to Airman TK being too intoxicated to consent.
But couldn't he have been intoxicated enough that he was unaware, but not so intoxicated that they believed he couldn't consent? The combination of alcohol, sleepiness, and exhaustion.
Right. In other words,
him unaware, otherwise unaware.
Well, the possibility certainly that there, Your Honor, but from the perspective of the reviewing court, the fact that rejected Airman TK's intoxication in this case being something that would have rendered him incapable of consenting.
Do we know that for sure?
We don't know.
Didn't cross out on the finding sheet those other choices, did they?
They did not cross them out, Your Honor, but by operational law under Green v. United States, those, by not circling them or by leaving them blank, that operates as an acquittal.
Well, regardless of whether they had circled them or crossed them out or not, we still have the CMO, right? The commander, the court martial order?
Correct, Your Honor.
Right, and what does that tell us?
Well, he was convicted of? The court martial order says exactly what the members that Airman Sager reasonably should have known that Airman TK was otherwise unaware that the sexual act was occurring. So the court martial order matches up with the omission on the findings worksheet in this case, Your Honor.
What was the evidence of, let's just assume otherwise unaware is this huge catch-all provision?
Yes, Your Honor.
What was the evidence in the record that would fall under otherwise unaware?
Well, there would be no evidence once.
Well, let's keep in everything.
Correct, Your Honor. So the evidence in this case was that many of the Marines that night had been out drinking, some more heavily than others. So the only evidence that could have possibly gone to the otherwise unaware portion would have been alcohol. But we also have the other specification, which members rejected the intoxication element.
Well, they rejected that he was incapable of consenting because of alcohol, right? That's different than rejecting that he was intoxicated. Do you understand the difference?
I do understand the difference, Your Honor. However, we don't know which portion of that charge the members rejected. All we know is that there is a rejection here. So for the reviewing courts to then say, well, here's why the members rejected it, that's a dangerous game in which you could be
done. All I'm saying is I don't know why they rejected him. I mean, they clearly rejected him. I'm just saying as a legal matter, right, there's a difference between drinking too much and having drunk to the point that you're incapable of consenting. right? Because otherwise, every time someone drank, they'd be incapable of consenting, and I'm pretty sure you don't want that to be the rule.
Correct, Your Honor. So what's the question, Your Honor? I'm sorry, was it having to do with the difference between the intoxication parts of the otherwise unaware and the alcohol?
Right, which is that they found him not guilty of being incapable of consenting, right, due to alcohol.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right, and all I'm saying, does that mean that there's no alcohol, that means that they rejected that he was drunk?
Or does it just mean
that they rejected that he was too drunk to consent?
We don't know, Your Honor, and that's, I guess, part of the problem with the findings report sheet and what the appellate courts can and cannot consider when they do their Article 66 review. All they have in front of them is a rejection of that specification and the elements that went to that specification. We can't affirmatively know why they chose to reject that specification. All we know is that there is a rejection in this case. But in order for the court to get to its erroneous conclusion as to what otherwise unaware means in this case, the court had to violate Herman Sager's double jeopardy rights. The members obviously chose to acquit Herman Sager of the too intoxicated to consent specification. By operation of law, they also chose to reject the asleep and the unconscious elements. However, when the NMCCA did their Article 66C review, they heavily relied on these facts. And they said that when Airman TK awoke, the appellant was already manually stimulating his penis. The government introduced substantial evidence that Airman TK was heavily intoxicated. Now, the NMCCA's reliance on these rejected elements is in direct violation of this court's holding in Smith, in which a military court may not make findings of fact contradicting findings of not guilty reached by the fact finder. That's exactly what the NMCCA did in this case. The lower court's errors are double jeopardy.
You assume, I think, that what they did acquitted him as a matter of law of the rest of this. And, of course, number one, it's a general verdict. Number two, the findings worksheet is, to say the least, ambiguous. And as I understand, you rely on Green.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, but isn't Green on something else? Green's on the relationship between a lesser-included offense and another offense. That's not this case.
Well, it's not this case, Your Honor. However, Green does stand for the proposition that silence...
It stands for the proposition in the context of a lesser-included offense.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I believe an expansive reading of Green is appropriate.
Well, an expansive reading of Green. But Green dealt with lesser-included offense, didn't it?
It did, Your Honor, but that's not to say that...
That's not this case.
It's not this case, Your Honor, but that's not to say that Green is only limited to lesser-included offenses. The general proposition of law remains the same, that silence on a charge is an express acquittal of that charge. Further, Your Honor, we disagree with the fact that we have a general verdict in this case. Once the members chose to circle specific theories of liability, this case was no longer a general verdict. Had the members just come back and circled guilty to the specification, not chose whether he was asleep, unconscious, or otherwise unaware, then we'd be operating in the realm of a general verdict. However, once the members took that additional step to choose their theory of liability, this case was removed from the general verdict consideration, Your Honor.
But weren't they directed by the military judge to do that?
Yeah.
They were only directed by the military judge to choose no or reasonably should have known. They took the second step on their own, Your Honor.
What do we do about the CMO? I mean, irrespective of whether we want to say it's a general verdict or not a general verdict or how we want to quibble about the words not being circled, what is the legal effect of the CMO?
Well, the CMO matches the language that was circled and not circled on the findings report sheet, Your Honor. There is no
difference.
Aren't
we stuck with the CMO, I guess is my point.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Because the CMO matches the member's findings. The CMO is the approved findings by the convening authority that goes to the NMCCA for review. So in that case, what we have on the CMO matches what the members chose on the findings worksheet, and that is the boundaries with which the NMCCA is allowed to operate when conducting their Article 66C review.
Do
In September, the President released model specifications for Article 120 in the form of Executive Order 13740. And in that case, there is a clear use of parentheses to offset asleep, unconscious, and otherwise unaware in that case. And we believe that that is illustrative of the intent of what of this being three separate theories of liability. We would draw an analogy to Article 108 for the damage, destruction, or loss of military property. Now, damaging and destroying aren't merely examples of how you lose military property. There are three separate theories of liability. We believe that those three separate theories apply in this case as well. There's commas, there's offset by the destructive war, and we believe that the analogy is the same. This is not a big umbrella under which all asleep or unconscious or otherwise unaware factor should fall, but rather this is three separate theories. And when the members chose one, they rejected the other two. And with that constraints is what the NMCCA had to consider when they did their Article 66C review. If there are no further questions from the court, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court will now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court. May it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Commander Justin Henderson, along with Colonel Valerie Danilet. I represent the United States as appellee. This court should affirm for two reasons. First, because, contrary to appellant's argument, Congress, through Article 120b2, addressed only one offense, not three. Second, because appellant was never entitled to exclusive application of the evidence in his trial to one offense or one theory of liability. Now, I'm happy to talk about the statutory interpretation issue, but I want to begin with this idea that the evidence at this trial, both before the members and on appeal, went only to one offense or one putative theory of liability. The evidence we're really talking about is Airman TK's testimony woke up to or awoke to appellant masturbating his penis. Appellant's argument is that that testimony goes to and can only go to the notion of asleep or the notion of unconscious.
Why didn't trial counsel charge it that way, then?
Well, that really goes to the first issue, Judge Olson. The specification is charged consistent with the way Congress drafted the statute. Congress drafted the statute as an offense against, a sexual contact against, somebody who's asleep, unconscious, or otherwise unaware. In the same way that Congress also drafted the intent element as to gratify or arouse. Now, we don't need to cleave gratify or arouse. And if we had evidence at trial about gratification or arousal, there would be no way to carve out one or the other of those terms.
Well, but here we're talking about a findings worksheet where there were these parentheses around all of these issues. So why aren't we just talking about a verdict by exceptions?
Your Honor, we're actually in no different position, and this is the way the government briefed it, as if appellant had been convicted by exceptions and substitutions. If appellant had been charged with committing a sexual contact upon Airman TK while Airman TK was asleep, and the members, consistent with Judge Sparks' question, just didn't think that Airman TK was quite asleep, but he was in that nether region of not quite knowing what was going on, the members, of course, could have accepted and substituted the words otherwise unaware of the sexual contact. An appellant would be in no different situation. And Airman TK's testimony in that case, that he woke up to appellant masturbating his penis, wouldn't be excluded from consideration on appeal. Woke up to doesn't... It doesn't fit so discreetly in that in that space.
But you don't disagree, though, that if that was the case, that the CCA erred in its 66 review, because it didn't find that it was by exceptions. It acted as though all three were still in play.
I don't.
They sleep unconscious or otherwise unaware. I mean, they said that all three were in play.
Well, I think that is a correct reading of the statute, Your Honor.
Well, and let's say we don't, we disagree with you, but irrespective of whether we agree with you or disagree with you, assume that you're wrong. You can't disagree that the CCA acted as though all three were still in play.
I do disagree. That's not exactly what the CCA held, Your Honor. The CCA affirmed only on the theory of otherwise unaware. That's the CCA's affirmance in this case. And so at bottom, even if the CCA misread the statute, they affirmed only on the theory that Airman TK was unaware of the sexual contact. And that's why the appellant can't demonstrate any prejudice from the CCA's statutory interpretation. The CCA considered, rightfully, the evidence that Airman TK was intoxicated, that Airman TK was exhausted, and that Airman TK woke up to appellant masturbating his penis. And woke up didn't exclusively apply to the notion of being asleep. And my fear today was that I was going to say something so silly that it would cause one of the court member panel to, one of the court members here to wake up to something that I said. But that doesn't mean that anybody was sleeping. Wake up applies equally to.
So you don't think that the term woke up refers to having been asleep?
In the vernacular, it means came to. It means.
So it came to from being unconscious?
Possibly from being unconscious, or possibly from being almost asleep. Possibly from being in a state of not knowing what was happening to his penis.
So other than being unconscious or asleep or intoxicated, what is the evidence in the record that we can find some otherwise unaware basis?
Well, there is Airman TK's testimony that he was passed out. Now, when he says passed out, he's not testifying that he literally got knocked out or knocked unconscious. He's testifying that he lost his touch with the rest of the world. He went to...
Now, do we know this? I mean, are you speculating as to what the meaning of passed out means, or did he testify?
He testified that he passed out, but he didn't testify as to the meaning of passed out. It's before the members properly, and then it's before the lower court properly.
Counsel, the problem that you have is what you're saying that the CCA opinion says isn't actually what it says. I mean, one of the things that they did is they say, we conclude that asleep or unconscious are examples of how an individual may be otherwise unaware. Okay, so they say that, and then they say, whether ANTK was asleep or unconscious due to alcohol consumption, exhaustion, or a combination of these things is only relevant as to whether the appellant reasonably should have known ANTK was otherwise unaware. So, I mean, their entire analysis depends on asleep and unconscious being folded into otherwise unaware, which requires us to accept your view of the statute.
What was the purpose for Congress adding those two words, if in fact they're included in otherwise unaware?
Well, Chief Judge Urban, Congress writes non-exhaustive exemplary lists all the time.
But or otherwise, right, as a matter of just normal grammar, means different than asleep or unconscious. It means it's something different.
Yes,
it
does.
They treated it as though it was the same.
Yes, it does, Your Honor. And the lower court treated it as if Congress was addressing the offense of committing sexual act or contact upon somebody who doesn't know what's happening. And two of the examples that Congress gave of that style of ignorance is asleep, unconscious. Or, generally, it is a crime to commit sexual acts or contact upon somebody who's otherwise unaware of that sexual act or contact.
Right, but it can't be otherwise unaware because they're asleep or unconscious. I mean, otherwise it would be surplusage. It would make no sense.
It would make sense in the same way that it would...
It makes sense in a common sense sort of way, but as a matter of statutory construction, it makes no sense at all.
Insofar as it addresses the singular offense of contacting or committing sexual act upon somebody who doesn't know, it addresses the same criminal act.
On the matter of statutory construction as to whether this court should find that there's a legal insufficiency issue, whether it should be remanded to the CCA to conduct a new Article 66 review?
This court may remand. Alternatively, this court may review the evidence at trial to find that even under a correct statutory interpretation, the evidence at trial still demonstrated that Airman TK was unaware that that appellant was committing a sexual act.
Well, isn't that a question of fact that we don't do? Don't we have to kick that back because it goes to factual sufficiency?
This court may not review the factual sufficiency, but insofar as the legal sufficiency review was infirm at the lower court, this court can address the idea that appellant wasn't prejudiced at all by the legal sufficiency review. And this final point about prejudice is apparent in appellant's defense and his theory of the case at trial. He wasn't concerned with, and at no point did the defense take any issue with, the nuances of the unawareness. The case at trial was whether Airman TK was consenting or was a consensual partner in the sexual act. That's what appellant testified to, and that was the nature of the defense. Because, and I ask this court to recall, it was appellant who asked for the bracketed language in the findings worksheet. It was appellant who invited this circling. So it wasn't a matter of appellant addressing to the fact finder exactly what state of knowledge appellant had about Airman TK's unawareness. Airman TK was either not aware or he consented. And that was the theory at trial.
Counsel, I thought earlier you said that you didn't necessarily disagree that this is an exceptions situation, guilt by they found him guilty with exceptions. And so what's your take on MRE 918 that addresses guilt by exceptions, where it says that if there is guilt by exceptions, the individual is not guilty of the exceptions?
And I apologize if I misconstrued the question earlier, Chief Judge Erman. The scenario for the lower court's legal and factual sufficiency review would be no different if we were facing exceptions and substitutions. But RCM 918 operates as an acquittal by exceptions and substitutions. And that's exactly what we don't have here. We didn't have explicit not guilty
findings. What do you do about the CMO? I mean, the CMO found him guilty of otherwise unaware, period.
The CMO did announce findings that were consistent with the member's findings worksheet. So
that's the only thing he's guilty of. I mean, the CMO is the final arbiter of that until it gets reviewed by a CCA or us.
For retrial purposes, that's exactly correct. And Green, in that sense, is binding, Your Honor. But what...
So that's all he's guilty of, right? What do we do about the things that, in fact, that he was not guilty of, which is asleep or unconscious?
And here's where I take issue with appellant structure of the findings.
This is an appellant structure of the findings. This is my review of the CMO.
There is not a not guilty finding as to the condition of asleep or the condition of unconscious.
There's a finding, you're either guilty or you're not guilty, right? And what he's guilty of is otherwise unaware. So there isn't some condition of, with respect to the other conditions, that is in limbo. I mean, if he's not guilty of it, by definition, he's what?
He's not guilty of committing a sexual contact upon somebody who was asleep or unconscious, which condition appellant should have known. So
when we have a CCA opinion that relies substantially on him being asleep or unconscious, what are we to do?
I respectfully disagree with the premise that the CCA relied substantially on those findings.
What about the language that I just read to you? I mean, how do you say that they didn't rely on it when they say that that's the reason that he was otherwise unaware? I mean, I'm not going to quibble with you, counsel. I mean, the opinion says what it says.
The opinion does say what it says, Your Honor, and the lower court's review of the evidence remained the review of Airman TK's testimony combined with the really undisputed review of the actual sexual act to conclude that Airman TK didn't know that when that sexual act occurred that appellant was masturbating his penis. To go back to Chief Judge Erdman's question about what we do with exceptions and substitutions, that's where this case is different from all of the double jeopardy cases that appellant relies upon. We don't have an exception, as in Smith, to the criminal act that appellant was charged with. At most, what we have is as an exception of the condition of the victim. Now, there's no case, and appellant is in uncharted territory when he asks this court to find that the exception of the condition of the victim operates to exclude review of evidence of that victim's condition on appeal. Just as in Gutierrez, when the charge rape is acquitted at trial, the appellant is still subject to review of the facts that went to rape to affirm his stalking conviction. Appellant doesn't get exclusive application of those facts to bind the lower court on appeal. Very briefly addressing the statutory interpretation issue, Your Honor. Asleep, unconscious, or otherwise unaware does operate as a non-exhaustive list of examples of manners in which a victim can be ignorant of an act. In the same way that in this very same statute, the words arouse or gratify are disjunctive examples of how an appellant stipulates his sexual interests. The examples of abuse, humiliate, and degrade are examples of a criminal intent that would allow an appellant to have completed a crime under this exact same statute. This exemplary list didn't require disjunctive charges. An appellant didn't complain of a duplicitous charge at trial. When the charge was pled generally, appellant knew what he was facing, and there was no notice issue. He doesn't raise any notice issue at this court. So when appellant is charged with and convicted of one of the theories that was before him at trial, then the reviewing court can review all of the evidence that went to that theory.
Well, what about the president's new issuance of the sample specifications that mirror the specification or the findings worksheet in this case? Isn't that an indication that the administration at least thought that they were disjunctive?
Well, the president isn't empowered to change the elements as set forth by Congress, and that's this court's holding as recently as Jones. So the appellant faces the same elements before and after Executive Order 13740. Appellant faced the same elements that he would have faced even in light of Executive Order 13740's delineation of, as I said, abuse, humiliate, or degrade. Now, if appellant were charged with abuse or humiliate or degrade, and a member circled humiliate, he wouldn't be entitled to come to this court and say, well, that the evidence that the lower court reviewed went exclusively humiliation, not degradation. It's that cleaving so straightforwardly that would really just render impotent a lower court's review of all of the evidence that's properly before the members. And it would really fly in the face of, at bottom, long-standing precedent, descending from Dunn through Jackson and all the way, most recently, through Gutierrez, that a conviction, an acquittal on one offense does not stand as res judicata on all the other offenses. And those are offenses. Appellant certainly doesn't earn res judicata acquittal on theories, as he argues here. There's no binding theory acquittal that would prevent a lower court from reviewing the evidence that went to a particular theory.
It wouldn't prevent a lower court, but doesn't that go to a fundamental issue? Let's say, for the sake of argument, that we were to decide that the CCA had a misunderstanding of the law. Doesn't that mean that there is a grave concern about their 66 review for factual sufficiency? That if they misunderstand the law on something that is so important to their legal factual sufficiency review, we need to kick it back to them to decide the very issues you're raising.
In some cases, Your Honor, but not this case. If the facts were so discrete, Your Honor, that the lower court simply couldn't review them correctly because of a legal misunderstanding, because the facts, you know, the car that they stole was actually
a red race car. It wasn't close to a Humvee military property.
Okay, but again, assuming for the sake of argument that we were to decide that the CCA's understanding of the law was wrong, what would be improper with this court saying, CCA, we're clarifying the law for you. You got it wrong. You erred. Now do an appropriate Article 66 review on factual submissions.
There would be nothing improper about that, Judge Olson. And I understand the court's question correctly, that CCA can be bound by this court's interpretation of a law and conduct a new legal and factual sufficiency review under a clarified interpretation. But that's not necessary here because the lower court, and I know Judge Ryan disagrees with me, the lower court held only that this victim was otherwise unaware, and it was convinced based on the facts as it reviewed them. And if I might conclude, I see my time is running up. If there are no further questions, I will sum up. Appellant invites this court to apply a novel interpretation of Article 120b2, and in so doing, invites this court to confine facts on review in such a manner that would upset longstanding principles of Article 66 review, descending from Dunn through Jackson all the way through Gutierrez. Nothing in the Congress's language or the President's requires such a review.
Thank you, Counsel. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of brief points. The government's reliance on cases like Dunn and Jackson and Gutierrez are completely inapplicable here. Those cases only deal with the members' abilities to find an inconsistent verdict. They do not touch at all on the appellate review powers of the NMCCA or service appellate courts. They do not apply here, and they do nothing to go against the Smith, Walters, and Stewart progeny that say that a court of military review cannot consider facts that were rejected by the fact finders at the trial level. The government also highlights the fact that the trial defense counsel did not object to the findings worksheet in this case and that they invited the errors that happened here. Well, the errors that happened here did not happen at the trial level, Your Honors. The errors here happened at the NMCCA. The trial defense counsel had no obligation and really could not have possibly known that the NMCCA was going to interpret the statute in a manner that they chose to, and to take the rejected facts and apply them to affirm his conviction. Finally, Your Honors, as to the prejudice, the NMCCA relied on acquitted facts to affirm the conviction. The only way to fix that problem is to reanalyze the facts, either by sending it back to the NMCCA to do a proper Article 66C review, or for this court to apply the Double Jeopardy Clause and see that the charge is legally insufficient and dismiss. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel, and the court thanks Counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted, and the court is in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court is adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.